Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the integrative cancer care charity that helps those with cancer understand their many options for support through integrative medicine, which is the combination of lifestyle and complementary medicine with conventional oncology. I reconnected with my guest for this week, Dr. Sharif Ibrahim, recently, after a long interval, and I'm taking the opportunity to find out about developments in his work, and in particular, about his new book. Dr. Sharif, a warm welcome back to the Yes to Life show.
Thank you very much indeed, Robin, for having me, and good morning to everyone. I'm very pleased to be back after, I think, 10 years now. Since we spoke last time.
I reckon it's eight, but it's a long time anyway.
Yeah. No. Yes, it's 8 years. Yes. I think it was 2018.
That's yeah, correct. I think yes, it
yeah.
was.
It's 8 years. Yeah. And I can introduce myself if you'd like to me too.
Do go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm Dr. Sharif Ibrahim. I'm a consultant physician and functional medicine practitioner. I have been in this field of medicine for over 46 years now. I think I graduated in 1980, which is now make it like 46 years. I spent something like 35 years in traditional medicine as a consultant physician in the NHS for almost 30 years there. I've got my membership. I've got my fellowship. I'm a membership of the Royal College of Physicians and fellowship of the Royal College of Physicians. And later on, I have taken another training in functional medicine, and I have to go to the U.S. and I have gained what is known as IFMCP, which is the qualification in functional medicine. And since then, I am practicing like a functional medicine doctor in the U.K. I've got my clinic in Walton and Thames, and London, Harley Street. I'm very pleased to be here with you, and thank you for having me.
Wonderful. All right. Great to have you here. So I bumped into you at the amazing Integrative and Personalized Medicine Congress in London a few weeks ago. And when we met, you were brandishing a copy of your new book, Your Metabolic Shift. That's what prompted me to get you back on the show, because I want to find out more about it. So maybe I'll just start off by asking you, there's plenty of books out there on metabolic health. So what prompted you to want to write your own?
Yes, I think it is, it's like a very, very important story, which I would like to share with the world. Because I have got two stories. I mean, if you go through the book is absolutely two stories running parallel to each other. One story is my personal challenges with metabolic syndrome. And metabolic syndrome is the, like an entry disease to all of the metabolic diseases. And it has got, five components. We will talk about them in details, if you'd like, later on.
We will.
And you need three, actually, to qualify for this metabolic syndrome. So I had the big struggle with metabolic syndrome since I was a child. In the school, I was collapsing and nobody knows what is happening there. They always give me a juice with sugar and I recover and something went like that. But I had a small little tummy, a little belly fat, you see, which has been there all the time, you see, despite the fact that I was very slim and I couldn't shift it. I did whatever I did, you see, exercises, you see, dieting, everything, it didn't went away. And I was not really very much really concerned about it, apart from the cosmetic point of view.
Right.
And then things went like that. And when I moved to the UK, within 2 years of me coming here, I gained 30 kilograms in weight.
30 kilograms, that's an immense amount
within
2 years.
Within 2 years.
30, what does that say about the way we live in the UK?
Yes, that says very much about the way we live in the UK.
Yes.
And I think later on we'll come into the details of that. But this did not really make me think about what is going on. And I carried on, and I was getting worse, you see, from the health point of view, despite the fact that I was a doctor. And at that time, I was about to become a consultant, actually.
Right.
I was having uncomfortable with shortness of breath. I had like a knee arthritis. My blood pressure started going up. My blood sugar started going up. And nobody knows what's going on. Cholesterol has gone up as well. Nobody knows exactly what's going on here. Until one night, I was working at King's College at that time. And I collapsed in the hospital corridor while I was seeing patients, very wow. acute patients at wow. that time. And I was lucky to be there because actually it was like a big bleeding into my thyroid gland in the neck, which has compressed my windpipe. And I was, in a few minutes, I was not able to breathe. I was suffocated, actually. I was lucky to be in the hospital, and I had been picked up by the anesthetist, and they put the tube while I was in the hospital corridor, and they took me to the theater, and they removed the blood there and put me in the ward. And unfortunately, I re-bled again. And the next operation was a little bit more serious. The first operation, actually, they removed half of my thyroid. And in the next one, they removed one quarter of the thyroid. So I've lost three quarters of my thyroid, just like, say, immediately after the two operations. And I was very unwell, and they put me unconscious. They put me into the ITU for 7 days until I recovered. And when I recovered, I looked around and I said, this is not good enough. Because I'm supposed to be here helping people get better.
Oh, you're right.
And now I'm becoming the most serious patient in my own hospital.
Mm.
So that's the main story regarding my personal part of the story. But my professional part of the story is also interesting because all of my life, I tried not to get specialized into a very small little area of medicine.
Okay.
And I think this is, I mean, many people actually, they talked to me about that and they offered me quite a good, you see, chest medicine, like say rheumatology jobs, you see, while I was in my training. And I refused. And I said, I mean, all the time I joke, you see, I say, I'm coming from a nomadic tribe in Africa.
Right. And you're not going to be tied down. Yeah. Very good. I like that.
Yeah, and I don't really live in this really limited really area of medicine. So it was very interesting. So that I had been all of my professional life looking after. I mean, eventually I did like internal medicine, which looks after all these modern chronic conditions like obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and all these things like arthritis, even dementia. So you look after them at the second level. And then if any of them is requiring, like, say, a tertiary level, then you refer them to the specialized units and the specialized the people who are specialized in that small little area. So I have a vast experience with these patients, like diabetes and things like that. And I see them deteriorating. You see, they start by, say, diet initially, and then we started by one or two pills, and then three pills and four pills.
Exactly.
Oh, it's not control this. Go for insulin, you see? You see, and we're just really all the time doing something like that, which is, it doesn't, I mean, I find that these patients are not winning at all.
Right.
So, and I thought, you see, we should really approach these chronic diseases in a different way. So this is the second reason, you see, my professional life. The third reason is that, you see, these chronic diseases, what I call metabolic conditions, they are almost about 1,200 conditions.
1,200?
Starting 1,200, yes, yeah.
Okay.
They stem from a single root cause. 1,200 diseases stem back to a single root cause, which is insulin resistance. And I said it's really going to be very cost-effective if we could focus on this insulin resistance and correct it, you see, that is going to help so many patients. I mean, 1,200 conditions.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
that
not
is a
easy.
Lot.
And these are the three reasons which triggered me actually to write this book. And I thought this is something, because I'm in a special position here as a patient, a doctor, and somebody who is aware about the size of the problem. And when I write something, then it's not going to be like a theoretical thing.
Right.
Just like, say, most of my colleagues, they have not really experienced these conditions, and they have not really experienced the bad effect of medications and side effects of medications and things like that. So they're approaching from just like a professional point of view. But for me, I have got the full experience, and I thought it would be a very, very good, idea, actually, to share this experience with the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it is a good idea. Okay.
Yeah.
There's one bit about your personal story you missed out. What about the marathons? These seem to have become something like an afternoon stroll for most people. For you, what's going on there?
Yeah, I think this is really very interesting, because when I came out of the hospital, you see, after my really big health breakdown, and I got like a big bag of medicine in my hand. And then we came back home with my wife, and we sat down, and I said, look, my wife, her name is Hala. Look, Hala, shall I take these medicines, or shall I look for something else? And she said, look for something else.
Right. Okay. No doubt about it then.
Yeah. And then we started thinking together, why did I reach this really poor, very poor health position? And we thought about, you see, what I had been doing in Africa. Because up to the time when I came here, I was pretty healthy, very healthy. I was slim. Actually, my weight was, the time when I came here, actually, my weight was 68 kilograms, you see. And very healthy, doing everything, walking, doing everything I can do quite comfortably. And what happened then, I found that the main issue may go down to the food, because I have changed my food. Instead of eating whole food in Africa, then I came here, and I found the whole processed food, the ultra processed food, you see, something like fast food, you see, in the hospital canteen. Actually, most of the time, you see, we eat fish and chips and McDonald's and all sorts of things like that, you see.
Hospital canteen is a prime place to get sick, yeah?
They get sick, definitely.
Yeah, right.
And the hospital mess, because, you see, I was working unsociable social hours, you see, and then going into the hospital mess all the time. And the hospital mess is full of chocolates and biscuits and cornflakes, and you get a lot of these, you see, processed food in the hospital canteen. So, and the toast and butter and something like that. So I was doing that all the time, and fizzy drinks. They're all available there. And so I gained this weight. The other thing is lack of physical activity. I used to walk a lot, and I used to, sleep, you see, longer hours. But when I came here, you see, I was doing something like 1 in 2. That means I'm in the hospital 8 hours one day. The next day, I'll do 24 hours. So it's 1 in 2. Too many hours. I used to do something like 120 hours per week or more.
Crazy. Three times what most people do, yeah?
Yes, that's quite a lot. And so this is the reason. So we decided, me and my wife, to approach this problem in two directions. One direction is to go back to a food similar to what I used to have in Africa.
Okay.
And we started doing that. And then the other direction is to increase my physical activity. So the plan worked, but I mean, it was too slow, because the first time when I started, for example, walking, I was just able to walk around the block.
Right.
And then I started, as you ask about the marathons, and then I started walking a little bit longer, and then a little bit more longer, and just a little bit. And then until I did something like, say, 5, I was able to actually to jog, like, say, 5K. And then I was able to increase that actually to 10K, and then 10K, 10 mile, and 10 half mile. Actually, something interesting here, because you see, the time when I was building up my marathon running, I moved into Surrey in Walton and Thames.
Yeah.
And I was one of those people who started, you know, the park run.
Yes.
And Bushy Park was the earliest, or the first, I think, park run in the world, you see?
Right.
So I started doing this park run. And then by the time when I was a little bit stronger and I did my first half marathon, then I said, let me just really pause this park run and let me do.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And I finished my 100 marathon because I wanted to join the 100 marathon club.
Ambitious, eh?
Yes, yeah. But I was very lucky because I pushed very hard. And in 2015, I did like, say, 49 marathon in 1 year.
One a week, yeah.
You see, yes, it's not like that, but I mean, sometimes you have like, say, two in one in a weekend, for example.
Two days running.
Yeah. Really, yes, yeah. And sometimes you do 3 days. And the maximum I did is 5 days consecutive marathons. Yeah.
So that's about 130 miles or something in 5 days.
Yes, quite a lot. Yes, yeah. But I'm very pleased to do that because, you see, if I just really waited until the COVID-19 pandemic, then I wouldn't have really finished my marathon center.
Right,
now.
Right.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, quite a story. Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah.
So look, this show's about cancer. We haven't talked about cancer particularly. It's definitely on your list of 1,200 potential diseases that stem from metabolic disorders, yeah?
Yes.
So do you want to just say something directly about why your book is relevant to people who have cancer?
Yes. You remember when we spoke in 2018, and then everybody was excited to say the main cause of cancer was sugar. And if you stop people taking cancer patients taking sugar, then you could really starve the cancer and you can treat it. But I think over the years now, there's quite a lot of work and a lot of research which has confirmed this is not absolutely true.
No, as usual. Why? As usual, simplistic answers turn out to be not quite correct. Yeah,
not quite correct. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Yeah, because you see, cancer now is like, say, it's not like one disease. I think there are hundreds of diseases which are different, actually, in morphology and all sorts of characteristics, you see. And so We know, I mean, there is a very strong evidence cancer is due to genetic mutation. There's no doubt about that. But I think cancer also has got like a metabolic and immunology components. They are very, very important. As we can really go into details, then we can find that, you see, some cancer patients can benefit from managing the metabolic problem and to slow down the growth of the cancer, or sometimes actually it can help in the treatment of cancer. But I think the current approach, I mean, at that time, actually, we're talking about, you see, lifestyle medicine can replace the conventional, you see, cancer protocol. And I don't think that is true.
No.
And that is not really helpful. Because I think what we need the oncology protocols to be there, and we can add, functional medicine or integrative medicine, lifestyle management to support that, you see. And then the metabolic stuff, when we can improve the metabolic health of cancer patients, that is going to be very, very helpful. In the process. But we should not really, I mean, for example, let us just say for one example, the management of the sugar, blood sugar, for example, and reducing the insulin, because insulin has got really a very negative, bad effects on cancer, because it can increase the rate by which, you see, cancer cells divide, and it can impede the effect of the chemotherapy and things like that. So lowering the insulin in many cancer is going to help, you see, control the cancer if we carry it on with the oncology protocol, and it can really improve life, you see, a quality of life, because most of these patients, they suffer with fatigue during the treatment, and they suffer with muscle loss during the treatment, you see. If we can do all this lifestyle medicine, that is going to help these patients improve their quality of life, and at the end of the day, is going to improve the outcome of the whole multidisciplinary team, including the functional, integrative, and oncology team.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I mean, looking at cancer in one way is, you could say that cancer is basically an inflammatory disease, couldn't you? And of course, this metabolic dysfunction is all inflammatory, isn't it? It all drives inflammation. So, In a way, you know, not to address those things, we're kind of leaving the fire to burn as it is already out of control, and doing nothing to damp it down.
Yeah, I think, yes, I mean, that's really very important, because, you see, that is the common factor, you see, inflammation, oxidative stress, because inflammation, insulin resistance is characterized by chronic inflammation, you see, chronic ongoing inflammation, which eventually results into insulin resistance, and that can increase the insulin, as you see, which is going to drive the division of the cancer cells and something like that. But on the other hand, sugar and blood sugar control and the food in particular also is a big element in oxidative stress. And oxidative stress is the thing that damaged the genome in the first place and exposed to this sort of mutation and start the process in the first place. So so I think, yes, controlling the metabolic issue, because the metabolic issue is very costly, and I think it distracts the immune system, because the third element of cancer is the immune system, which is not doing its job, because, you see,
right,
the cancerous process happens in every single person, every single day. But you need to have, like, say, this surveillance immune cells, which goes around and find these cancerous cells and get rid of them. But if the immune system is distracted by a big metabolic process, then it's not doing its job.
Right.
So this is why it's going to be very, very important, actually, if we can concentrate on controlling the metabolic process and making it actually run at an optimal level, that is going to help the treatment of cancer, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, great. So back to your book now. It's cut into sections, and the first section of the book you devote to examining the components of metabolic syndrome. Do you want to just say what's in that section?
Yes, the metabolic syndrome is not a disease by itself. It is like a collection of risk factors. The risk factors include the belly fat accumulation, which is we call it central obesity. The other element is elevated or raised blood sugar, high blood sugar, high blood pressure. And then the fourth element is high triglyceride. And triglyceride is the common fat. So it goes high. And then the fifth element is low good cholesterol, because, you know, cholesterol, there is one that we call it the bad guy, and the other one we call it the good guy. Mm-hmm. And so when the good guy goes low, then that is a metabolic risk factor. Because, you see, this is very interesting, actually, in heart disease, because all the time in heart disease, we thought that the bad guy, which is LDL, low-density lipoprotein, we always think that this is the cause of heart disease. When the studies around the causation of the heart disease was taken and so many and pulled together, they found that, you see, this is not the strongest element. The strongest element is high-density lipoprotein, which is the good guy. When the good guy goes low, then the risk of heart attack goes high.
Right.
So the combined study, actually, or the meta-analysis, found that 90% of the studies, the population of the studies, 90% of them, they have low HDL, the good guy, had heart attack, while the percentage is much lower with those who have had a high LDL, bad cholesterol. So this is the metabolic syndrome. And metabolic syndrome, as I said, it is the gateway through which people will enter into the metabolic diseases.
Right.
So most of patients with high blood pressure, for example, they have to come through this gate first before they get their high blood pressure or their heart disease or their dementia. They have to come through this gate. So my worry and my concern, and this is why I'm taking this like my personal mission here, is to make people aware about this condition. Because if anyone would discover that, you see, they are at risk of heart disease, for example, heart attack or stroke earlier, then they would have taken precautions, and they would have improved their metabolic health, you see, and that is going to avoid. Because I remember at the beginning of the book, I told the story of somebody, of someone who came out of, I was in Dundee, working with Prof. Pringle, and someone, and we had like a mobile heart clinic. We take the mobile clinic and we go and we just really catch people. Healthy people that are just really walking around, and we say, can we ask you for, can you please come for a heart check? And then this chap came out of a bingo, and he was in his 30s, and he came out, and we invited him, and we checked him, and everything was bad. His blood pressure was bad, his ECG, the heart trace, was bad, and very alarming, because he had three blood vessels, actually, when we did his angiogram in the hospital, found three of the main, actually there are three main heart vessels, heart arteries. All of the three heart were blocked.
Wow. So he was heading for a big fall, wasn't he?
For a big heart attack. Yeah. Mm. And fortunately we picked him up, and he had the operation, and that has sorted out the problem. But he has to take a number of pills actually to maintain that. But I mean, if we meet this chap, like say a few years back before he had this problem,
Ryan,
then just like sorting out their lifestyle and something like that would really sort out the problem. And they do not really have to go through a major operation like this. and continue to take all these big number of medication. So metabolic syndrome is really very important actually for us actually to identify those people at risk of it early. And this is why I think this book is going to contribute quite a lot to it.
Hopefully so.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, well, great. And then, so going on in section 2, you start to talk about some of the main conditions that result, derive from this condition. And the thing that strikes me very much about them is just how diverse they are. I mean, people would have a lot of trouble joining the dots together for these different diseases. In fact, they seem very separate. And I'm sure all those disciplines that you didn't want to get sucked into would also see them as quite separate. But this kind of evolution of looking at disease, so many diseases as having a common source, is relatively recent, really, isn't it? Anything that claimed to treat several diseases at once was like a red flag for quackery straight away. If you said this helps with, you know, 3 or 4 different conditions, it was a hallmark of quackery. But actually, this is for real. The metabolic syndrome, as you point out, is a real measurable thing. And there are all these very different conditions resulting from it. Do you want to just talk about some of them and explain how they're connected with metabolic syndrome?
Yes, I think that the best example is liver disease, chronic, you see, they call it fatty liver disease. Which now is becoming like a big, really problem because before we had got something called alcoholic liver disease, and it was the main cause for liver transplant. But now, actually, nutritional fatty liver disease is the main indication for liver transplant.
Wow.
And it's also a big cause of liver cancer, because the process of accumulation of fat in the liver causes fatty liver, and then this can progress into inflammation, and then it causes liver cirrhosis, and liver cirrhosis can progress into liver failure. So the liver is not really able to do its function.
Right.
And then eventually it can trigger liver cancer. So this is metabolic. And particularly you can relate this to a bad source of sugar. For example, for the listeners actually would probably benefit from knowing that. You see the high fructose corn syrup, which now is everywhere. In the juices, the drinks, in the bread, in the sauces, like ketchup, everywhere. That thing is like a different sugar, because we have got glucose, which is the primary fuel of the body, and that is the one which trigger insulin release from the pancreas and cause the metabolic syndrome. But this one, the high fructose corn syrup, does not really stimulate the pancreas to produce insulin. And this is why, actually, initially when it came out, then everybody would say, oh, this is a safe sugar.
Right.
Because it does not really trigger this insulin release, and it doesn't really cause this problem. But it goes straight into the liver and turn the liver into a fat factory.
Mm, wow.
So the liver produce fat and fills the liver cells with fat, and then they knock the liver cell liver as a big, really, pool or a big area where it take the blood sugar initially after you eat. Then the muscle actually is another area which benefit from taking too much sugar, you see, after eating. So this is a big problem. The metabolic liver is a big problem. And this is an example, which is, people do not really make a link between sugar and this issue.
Right. We did have time to go into them all, but just to list some of the things you've got in there to give people the idea. The sleep apnea, which is a curious condition where people stop breathing at night.
Yeah.
And that would be hard to link up. Periodontal disease, so gum disease.
Yeah.
Osteoarthritis.
Osteoarthritis, yeah. This is arthritis.
Very
yeah,
common condition now.
Yeah, very common. Yeah. Yes.
And swollen prostate, That
prostate, yes.
Yeah, that also very common in men in later life. Very common.
Yes. PCOS, very, very interesting. The ladies, you see, obese ladies actually who become infertile, and they have got high insulin level, insulin resistance, and they benefit actually from correcting their metabolic condition. And I have got so many ladies actually come to the clinic.
Yeah,
and we found this problem, and their main concern, they are not really getting pregnant and bringing children. And once the metabolic problem is sorted out properly, these ladies just really get pregnant.
How about
and,
that?
They are doing very, very well, yeah.
Fantastic.
But the interesting thing about the prostate, because about all these conditions, they go to different departments. As you said, you see, apnea goes to the chest department, liver goes to the hepatology, and then prostate to the urologist. So different departments, and they deal with this condition like their specialty. Say the prostate, for example, they just read, your prostate is big, so we need to take it out. And that's it, you see, or to give it medicine that is going to shrink the prostate, or to shrink it temporarily and help to open up the urine path.
Right.
But they do not address the metabolic issue. So this is why I thought it would be really very interesting actually to include these conditions in the book and say exactly the link to the metabolic syndrome and how these patients are going to benefit from the sugar problem being sorted out properly. And I think if we can get all these patients to a metabolic physician, for example, working, or even the GP, actually, if they get really a little bit more oriented in the metabolic management of metabolic diseases, then they could really sort out quite a big problem.
They could. And interestingly enough, this is one of those situations where you go along because you've got an enlarged prostate or you've got sleep apnea, and you sort that out through this means of correcting the metabolism. And you're bound to be sorting out a lot of other, at least potential problems at the same time.
So that's
amazing.
So
the rest of the book you dedicate, of course, to solutions, which is what people want the book for, which is great. So you've got sections setting out all the lifestyle measures that are going to help in getting the system back to normal. Then near the end of section three, you've got a section which is called Baby Boomers Got It Wrong, Blue Zoners Got It Right. So not everybody knows what a blue zone is. So maybe if you could briefly explain those and then say why you've got this section and what you're trying to say to people.
It's a clear message here because I looked into the studies around baby boomers, and these are the people who are born between 48 after the war.
Yeah, me.
1948. yes, and me as well. Yeah. 1948 and 1964. And the blue zoners, these are the people who live in what is known as blue zones. I mean, this is in Greece, in Italy, in Japan, and you see in Florida. No, not Florida, actually, California, mm-hmm. actually. There is a blue in California. So these are the healthiest and the longest living people in the world. And when I looked into the research here, then the very interesting research is that the baby boomers, you see, that's actually a research which is done by MRC in London. They found that these guys, by the time when they reach retirement at the age of 60, they are not healthy, despite the fact that they have been covered by the NHS, because, you know, the NHS was established actually in 1948, I think.
48, yeah.
Yeah, and the social service also was supportive to these guys. So we thought, I mean, these guys, they are going to be the healthiest people in the world.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they are not, because the statistic is showing that, you see, most of them, they have got conditions, health conditions, chronic health conditions. And the most important was the overweight, diabetes, and then high blood pressure. You see, these are the main conditions. And so they are not winning. These guys are not winning because, you see, most of them, they ended up having these conditions. And these conditions normally proceed, actually, to disability. You know, I know, I mean, this is the pattern which I normally see when I was in the hospital.
Mm.
Right. Disease, chronic disease, progress to disability, and disability progress to dependency.
Right.
And that actually, this is the worst and the most costly problem in the UK. Because, I mean, the other day I was talking about, you see, which problem, you see, health problem that costs the NHS most. And people say, heart disease, stroke.
Yeah.
No, that's not true.
And metabolic disease, yeah.
Yeah, metabolic disease and dependency in particular, because dependency has got two components. I've got the medical component and I've got the social component.
Yes.
And the social component is very expensive.
Very,
now,
yeah.
Staying in a nursing home costs something like £6,000 to £10,000 pounds per month.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah,
huge. And continuous, actually, expenditure.
Mm.
So so this is why I compared the life of the baby boomers with the blue zoners.
Right. Why
the blue zoners are the healthiest and the longest living people in the world. And it goes down to simple things, things like their food, which include like whole food, include beans. Actually, they eat beans every day. All is a lot of fiber, a lot of whole food, fish, and things like that. Things like activity. All of them, they are very active physically.
Mm-hmm.
The social links, the sleep. They sleep early. So this is why they are the longest living. And most of them, actually, they are in their 90s and in their, and they pass the 100 mark as well. They are centenarian as well. So this is this really comparison, actually, to give people a little bit feeling. You see, if you do this, you might end up this way.
Yeah. Yes.
And if you do this, you're going to end up in a better position.
Very good. So I think the pointer lies in the hospital canteen. The food that you were talking about and in your common room that you went to, the kind of food that's fed to doctors and to patients in hospitals tells what's some of the fundamental ideas the NHS has about health and well-being, which are missing the mark. So, greater operations and, you know, giving you new knees or whatever. But on this score, they're missing the mark.
Yeah.
Guess what? We're out of time. That was a great chat. And thanks particularly for that explanation at the end. The Blue Zones, I think, is fantastic research because the evidence is all there. You can actually see, yeah, these people are healthy and well. That is so more compelling than a lot of these huge population studies that associate one thing with this particular disease or whatever. And they seem to inevitably get it wrong a lot of the time. However big the study, the answer is wrong. We all go off course for 40 years because of that study. And, you know, it doesn't help. But this evidence of really what is working for people is very compelling, I find. So really interesting, well worth looking into. And thank you for telling us about your book, which I would encourage people to go out and take a look at for themselves. It's not some weighty textbook. It's very concisely written. It uses straightforward language and it's very accessible and easy to read. So I hope it will appeal to a lot of people and give a lot of people a lot of clues.
And actually they have got really like something like 80 recipes, which will help them to.
Yes.
There is something like 40 case studies, which I mean, many people now they look into these cases. And, oh, this is me.
Yeah.
You see, and exactly. Then they follow what happens for this case study.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Very useful. Very useful.
Yeah.
All right. Great. Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Sherry.
Thank you very much indeed for having me and a great pleasure actually being with you. And I wish your listeners all the best, you see, with their health and well-being.
Fantastic. All right. Thanks very much, Sherry.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Goodbye.
You can find out more about Dr. Ibrahim and his new book at his clinic website, which is thevitalityclinic.co.uk, and also at drsharifibrahim.com. So that's spelled drsharifibrahim, drsharifibrahim.com. It's just a few weeks until the Yes to Life annual conference, our flagship event, and this year it will be better than ever, with a speaker list that includes Dr. Nasha Winters, Dr. Leo Prumboom, Dr. David Hamilton, James Maskell and more. Important subject matter regarding key components of health and well-being and recovery from cancer in the psychological, emotional and spiritual realms. As well as featuring the four men from our current campaign to highlight what integrative medicine has on offer to men. All four of the four men will be speaking and they're going to be available on the day. The conference goes under the title Reclaiming Our True Nature, and although it takes place on the 26th of September in Euston, London, booking will close about a week prior to the event, so don't miss the opportunity to be there. Go to conference.yestolife.org.uk and book your place now. Hope to see you there. But if you really can't travel to London, recordings will be available a few weeks after the event. Thanks for joining me today. I very much hope you'll want to listen again next week when I'll be back with another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.